Do you know what time it is? It's supernatural story time. And if you're easily scared, and even if you're not, there's only one thing left to do. Just turn off the lights, because these are stories that you listen to only in the dark. Spoken of only in whispers, volume 5, story number 1. My ex-husband and I had just bought our first house right before our third child was born. It was an old farmhouse that was a mile away from General Brown's home during the war. That was the War of 1812. It was built on the land that his soldiers camped on. When we asked about previous owners, we were told that there have been many since it was built in 1875. No one had lived there for more than 5 years before selling. Thought it was odd, but no one elaborated, so we moved in. Strange things happened all the time. Lights flickering, dryers starting for no reason, toilet paper unraveling itself, kids' jolly jumper jumping by itself, kids talking to those men who have boo-boos. If I told them to stop it, they did. The ghosts, not the kids. Night before my scheduled C-section, my parents came to stay with me. They slept in the wood stove room by the stairs leading to our bedrooms. My mother asked me the next day about the soldiers. She said they looked war-torn and had marched through the wall of the wood stove room up the stairs. General Brown soldiers coming back to camp after a war? I finally got the nerve to ask the farmer who lived in General Brown's old house why no one stayed there long before moving. He said that bad luck always happened to those who lived there. Loss of jobs, divorce, etc. After living there, my ex started to become a complete jerk. Lost a few jobs, started cheating, treating me very badly, physically and emotionally. One night, I heard a man's voice telling me to leave. It was best. I decided it was time to leave my ex, and I moved 2 weeks later. The night after I moved my stuff out of the house and unplugged all appliances in the house, my ex moved out 1 week before I did, the house caught on fire. It was deemed an electrical shortage and burnt to the ground. Maybe my soldiers were stopping the damage to any other families. By the way, my ex returned to his normal self, doing well at job. He was the man I once married. Was it the house? I guess I'll never know. Story number 2. When I was 18 years old, my boyfriend and I were going to prom. We had one of his friends and his date in the car with us. We went to eat in the town I lived at. Then we were headed back to his hometown. While his friend told him to take a certain road, that it would be a shortcut, as soon as we turned on the road, I heard a voice that said, "Put your seatbelt on." I did, and told everyone else to do the same, while the other girl put hers on and made her date put his on. Every time my date would reach for his seatbelt, a curve would come in the road, and he would let go of his seatbelt to drive. I undid mine, put his on him, and then put mine back on. The next curve we ran around, the car went straight. My boyfriend swore that he turned the steering wheel, but it still went straight. I hit my head on the plastic piece on the side of the front windshield holding it. Other than that, no one else was hurt. I was just shaking. The house we went to call for a tow truck belonged to a nurse. She was afraid I was going into shock. I told her it was just cold. Arkansas in May, not cold. When I went home that night, I knocked on my mother's door to let her know I was home. She asked, was everything all right? I told her I'd like to talk to her. She opened the door and said, "You were in a car wreck tonight about 9, weren't you?" I told her, yes. She said, about 9, she got this weird feeling that we had been in a wreck, but that we were okay, so she was not worried. If that voice wouldn't have told me to put my seatbelt on, I would have possibly been thrown out the windshield because of how hard we hit the ditch, then went into the field. Next story. My brother and his wife and kids moved into a rental house out in a rural area back in the early 90s. While they were unpacking, this was the summer, the furnace kept turning on. They also kept hearing a voice coming through the vents and thought the kids were outside yelling, but the kids were playing quietly. When my sister-in-law was unpacking in the bedroom, she found a metal assistive bar, like you'd put in the tub or next to the toilet in the closet, and a bunch of orange specks in the carpet by the window. She said it creeped her out for some reason. After they settled in, she said whenever she would turn the TV off and go to bed, she'd hear what sounded like somebody shuffling across the carpet. My brother worked early mornings, so he was always asleep and therefore didn't believe her. This went on for months. One day she was babysitting her niece, who was about 2 or 3. Sister-in-law was in the bedroom folding laundry, and the niece was standing at the door and would not come in the room. When my sister-in-law said, "Come on, come on, Jesse," her niece shook her head, pointed across the room and said, "No, that man over there." Needless to say, my sister-in-law decided she had to find out what was going on. We had a spiritual channeler come to a relative's house a few months later. When asked if there was a ghost in my sister-in-law's house, the spirit, through the channeler, said there was. She said he was a very athletic man who had developed a very crippling disease, and he couldn't take it, so he shot himself in the head while lying in bed. He also said to tell the spirit he doesn't belong there anymore and that he had to move on. My sister-in-law went back to the realtor who had rented the house to them, and he finally confirmed the story. The man had been an athlete, had developed a crippling disease, and could barely walk across the room, hence the shuffling sounds. He asked his wife to go out for orange juice one day and shot himself while she was gone. After a few more encounters, they were able to get through to the spirit by telling him that his wife had moved and he didn't belong there anymore. My brother, by the way, did end up witnessing some events over the course of the year this went on, but he still says there must be some explanation other than a ghost. Next story. I heard this story from a friend of mine who is also a fellow nursing student, but from another university. One night, while they were on a night shift, a 9-year-old female child unfortunately died in the PD ward. My friend was the one assigned to perform post-mortem care to the said patient. So there he was, cleaning the patient's body and all. He placed a red bracelet in the patient's right hand, as it was the policy of the hospital to place a red tag on the right hand of all patients who are pronounced dead. After performing his task, he was on his way to the elevator when suddenly the little girl came running after him. Terrified, he quickly pushed the close button so that the elevator would close right away and bring him to safety down to the lower floor. While inside the elevator, an old woman in a hospital gown asked him why he closed the elevator door right away when a child wanted to board in. Still overwhelmed with fear, he explained to the old lady, "That was the child that I just performed post-mortem care a while ago. She is already dead. Did you see the red tag on her right arm? That is the mark for all dead patients here in the hospital." The old woman raised her right arm and replied, "Similar to this?" My friend was found unconscious inside the elevator a few moments later. He never stepped inside the said hospital again. Ever. Next story. I worked medical surgery for about 3 or 4 years. I had a patient in her 50s that came in with abdominal pain and constipation. Well, the case was open and shut. Once they got in, they saw there was so much cancer, they just closed the incision. Anyway, I got her straight from PACU into room 26. She was still stuporous, and the surgeon had not yet informed her of the situation. No family was around, and no visitors came during my shift. I got her at about 8 p.m. The strange incident took place about 2 to 3 a.m. I entered the room to do VS rounds, and she was sobbing. I asked her if she was in pain. She denied pain, but said that the other nurse just told me my surgery didn't go very well, and I don't have long to live. I just about blew my top. I was livid. I wanted to find out who in the hell had told my patient about the surgery. That is the surgeon's responsibility, not the nurse's. After calming my patient somewhat, I asked her what the nurse looked like that had told her the prognosis. She described a nurse with a white hat, the white uniform, with white stockings, and everything down to hair color and height. Well, on my floor, there were only 5 or 6 of us working that night, and none fit the description even remotely. And the only nurse I know of that still wears that sort of uniform works days in a different unit. My patient went on to tell me that this nurse in white sat at the edge of her bed, and sure enough, the foot of the bed and the sheets looked exactly like someone had been sitting there moments before. This patient's room is also at the end of the hall, with no door at the end. So the only way anyone could have gone to that room was to pass the nurse's station and be seen. No one had gone by. Fast forward to a year ago, and another patient in room 26 told one of the other night RNs that a nurse in white kept coming in to check the IV. I had not told that RN my story, and that RN was hired after my experience. Then, about a month ago, one of the RNs came down to the nurse's station and asked who had room 26. The nurse that had that room spoke up and wondered what was up. The first nurse said that there was a lady sobbing in there, and she heard it from the hall, but did not look. Instead, she came to ask 26's nurse if she knew what the deal was. Well, 26's nurse said that there was an elderly man in that room, not a woman. At that point, we all went down and went into 26. The man was sleeping quietly. The TV and the radio were off. And when we awoke the man, he denied pain. So I doubt he was whimpering in his sleep, certainly not sobbing, as the first nurse heard. So this is three separate weird happenings in one room, all experienced by three separate nurses that were previously unaware of the other instances. Kind of prickles a hair on the back of my neck, just thinking back on it all. Next story. While I was doing my training, I worked as a nurse's aide at a center for children with mental and physical disabilities. I was told a story one night by a shift nurse who had worked with a nurse who had been at the center for years. St. Helens, this is a fake name, originally started life as a TB sanatorium. St. Helens is an impressive old brick building nestled into a park-like expanse of nature, and to this day remains run by the Catholic Church. It was built several kilometers outside of the city limits to prevent the spread of any type of devastating disease. On many of the walls of the current center hangs photos of a bygone era prior to the invention of streptomycin, of nursing sisters in full habits tending to patients in iron lungs or taking the stronger patients into the good air of the Canadian prairies as a form of treatment. From what I understand, when a person was diagnosed with TB in those days, they were required by law to receive treatment in the sanatorium, which meant several months, if not years, of confinement, in many cases against the patient's will. Some patients, unhappy with their involuntary admission, would attempt to escape back to the city and to their loved ones. The sisters at St. Helen attempted to dissuade such actions by doing an hourly round of the perimeter of the grounds to search for patients or any sign of patients attempting to escape. After the revolutionary discovery of streptomycin, the number of patients with TB dropped significantly and sanatoriums rapidly became obsolete. As a result, St. Helens was facing closure due to declining number of patients. The Catholic Church managed to identify a need in the community for a center for the care of children suffering from severe mental and physical disabilities. As the population of the patients in the center had changed, the need to carry out an hourly round of the grounds ceased to exist. Over the years, the number of nursing sisters declined, and nurses' aides from the public sector were brought in to fill the empty post. It was at this time the nurse who told this tale began working at the center. Shortly after she started working at St. Helens, the new nurse had a disturbing encounter. She was working night shift one evening and had to walk over to another ward to collect some supplies that her home ward was short of. She stepped off the lift into the dark corridor, desperately trying to remember the directions given to her by a fellow nurse. As she turned a corner in the hall, she encountered one of the nursing sisters walking away from her further up the way. Relieved to see someone who would surely know where the nurse needed to go, she called out to the sister and quickened her pace to catch up. As she ran to catch up to the sister, the nurse thought that she could see a dim red glow coming from under the sister's dress and from the openings of the sleeves, but thought perhaps it was her eyes adjusting to the change in the light. The nun never slowed or acknowledged hearing the nurse's call and soon turned a corner. Still in hot pursuit, the nurse rounded the corner into a silent, empty corridor. There were no doorways in that hallway, only a flight of stairs to the block of wards where the nurse was headed. There was no way the nun could have made the distance in the few seconds it took the nurse to reach the corner, and there were no sounds of anyone on the stairs. The nurse assumed that her eyes were playing tricks on her and didn't make too much of it until a few weeks later when she was on the night shift again. It was well into the night, and the nurse was doing her hourly break check. She entered one of her charges' room and was checking that everything was okay. She noticed that she had forgotten to close the patient's drape. She remembered thinking it wasn't an issue at the moment, as there was no moon that night, but that when morning came, the sun would beam in and possibly disturb her patient's sleep. She moved across the room to close the curtains and was about to pull them shut when she noticed a red light in the distance. At that time, the center was still out of the city. It had been engulfed by the urban sprawl by then, and therefore there shouldn't be anyone on the grounds. As she peered into the night, she could see the light slowly making its way along the end of the field, along the border between the hospital grounds and the forest surrounding it. Knowing that no one should be out on the grounds at that hour of the night, the nurse headed out to the desk to phone the sister in charge. The nurse's aide at the desk stopped the nurse from placing the call after she heard the story recounted. The aide's response was not one of concern, but instead one of calm. She explained that one of the old nuns had dedicated her life to the care of the TB patients and had drowned when she had pursued a patient who tried to escape by swimming across a river just off the hospital grounds. Since that time, she had been seen throughout the hospital walking the corridors, and every so often, she had been seen doing the hourly rounds of the grounds. Apparently, she always faces away from people who see her, and she has a red light glowing from the openings in her habits. As I said before, I don't know how true this was. As much as I would have loved to, I never did see her. Next story. I worked at a small privately owned nursing home. A lot of the patients had been there a long time. Naturally, I was silly enough to take the night shift for 2 weeks right out of school to cover the night nurse who was ill. This place had these old hallway lights that you had to stick a paper clip in the slot on the wall to turn them on and off. There was one at each end of the main hallway. I carried the paper clip on my key ring. So there I am one night. I came in at 11, took a report, set up supplies, etc. Then I shut out the lights. The only light was from the lamp on my desk and the eerily red exit sign that cast this red wash all over the walls, reminding me of that scene in Halloween 2 where Laurie Strode is trying to escape from Myers in the hospital. Anyway, I'm standing at the med cart, stocking med cups, and I feel a whoosh of air. It's winter, and no windows are open. I hear a rustling sound and think that it's the resident at number 3 who is restless sometimes at night. His room is about 6 feet from the med cart. Now, being the brave nurse I am, I decide to check to make sure he's not trying to get out of bed. I go over to his room and find that he's sound asleep. I do a bed check, and everyone is sleeping and accounted for. The CNA is in the TV room doing flow sheets. I continue on with stocking. A little while later, I hear the noise again, and this time see a figure out of my peripheral vision. They say spirits present themselves in your peripheral vision. Pass by me into room 3. This time, I'm not so brave. I took the CNA in with me, who's thinking that I'm nuts. We crept into the room and found the patient sitting up in bed having a conversation with someone who isn't in the room. When I asked him who he was talking to, he tells me the man who's sitting in the chair in the corner. Naturally, there's no one in the chair. The aide and I settle him down and leave the room. At the report the next morning, I'm telling the nurse about what happened. Before I could say who the patient was talking to, she said, "The man sitting in the chair in the corner, right?" Creepy. Later, I talked to the usual night nurse, who said it happened all the time when she was on. More than one patient had the same experience. I never did get the name of the mysterious man in the corner. In any case, that was the end of my night shift stint. P.S. Those stupid lights in the hall used to flicker on and off all the time. Maybe it was the man in the corner, or just old electrical wiring. And on second thought, just ask yourself, have you ever gotten locked in a basement supply closet when you are the only one with a key? Next story. I live just north of Boston, about 3 miles from me in Danvers, Massachusetts. There's an old state hospital with a very, very lengthy history. It was built in the late 1800s as a mental hospital that housed patients with every mental illness you can imagine. Unfortunately, a lot of the patients were teenagers whose parents dumped them there with failure to socialize and silly things like that. Most likely, they were just teenagers. They began doing lobotomies, shock therapy, and water therapy, along with some procedures that were not even remotely acceptable. We all know what mental health was like in the 1900s, non-existent. There was a lot of abuse that went on there. If you looked at a picture of Danvers State from the air, it looks like a bat. The wards that were furthest away from the main building housed the extreme patients. I've heard more creepy stories from nurses who worked there, including my dad, who trained there in nursing school in 74. It closed in 86 and remained empty and in disrepair until about 2006. Kids used to party up there, and there were a few incidents of cult worship going on there too. Anyway, first story. Danvers State was heavily patrolled and guarded since the early 90s. I can't say how I was able to go up there, but I did with two other people. It's a sprawling place on many acres of farmland. It was a self-contained city, had its own everything. I have been wanting to see it up close for years, and I finally got the chance. We parked in front of the main entrance. I got out of the car and walked up the front door. It was sort of open, so we pushed it open all the way. I saw a long corridor with the creepiest wheelchair I have ever seen. I suddenly had the most intense feeling of dread come over me. I felt like I was rooted to the ground. I heard a voice say, "Get out." You can bet my butt was back in that car as fast as my legs would carry me. I refused to go in and look around, which I get razzed about all the time because all kids that grew up around here try to get into Danvers State. I went to work the day after and was getting sheets out of the linen closet. It's not uncommon to have sheets marked with area hospital names on them. They come back with the patients. I pulled out a sheet and take it in to make a bed. I flip it open, and don't you know, it has property of Danvers State printed on it. I put it in a bio bag and threw it out with the hazmat. I had a patient who was at Danvers State until 1986 when they closed. She never left the nursing home I worked out of for fear we would send her back. She would flip if you tried to send her to the dock or for tests or what have you. The only time she went out of the building was the day she died. When it closed in 1986, a lot of patients were just released with no place to go. Courtesy of budget cuts, a lot of them just kind of migrated back there and lived together until they were forced out. There's a lot of info on it. And in 2004, a movie was filmed there called Session 9. By 2006, the infamous Danvers State Hospital had been converted into luxury apartments. Next story. I used to work as an aide in this really old hospital. I had two separate spooky events that happened in my shift. The first one was when I was doing my rounds, and I kind of glanced at the other end of the hallway. Since our nurse's station is like in the middle, I saw an old lady in white, patient uniform, walking bare feet in the hallway, as if she was looking for somebody. I was going to wait for her to approach me, but she disappeared when she passed on the other side of the hallway. I came to look for her, and I didn't see her pass by me. I then walked around in the hallway to make sure she was okay. My co-worker said they didn't see anybody walk in front of them. I said, "How could this be? It's one of the patients." The nurses just looked at me and didn't say anything. All my patients were accounted for, but oh well. I didn't say anything anymore, but it gave me a creepy feeling. On another occasion, when I was emptying the patient's folly, I went to my post-op patient's room since she was sleeping. I didn't want to wake her up, so I left the light off. I emptied her folly bag and went into the bathroom before turning on the light switch so I could measure her urine output. And then I felt a slight brush of wind pass by me, and I heard a faint muffled whisper in my ears. I knew it wasn't my patient. I must have dropped a urinal on the floor, then I ran out of the room. I didn't know how I got in the nurse's station, and my co-worker said I looked really scared, like duh. After that, I prayed and hoped that none of that will happen again on my night shift. Some patients told me a lot of stuff they saw at night, like they see an old man sitting in the chair to the old white lady going into their bathroom and not coming back out. I try to ignore it, but honestly, I felt it too. Next story. I was working in a new hospital, having recently returned home. I was a very inexperienced staff nurse at the time, having only qualified a couple of months before. At the time, you could work on the bank as a newly qualified. This was what I was doing. I was looking after two bays and two side rooms, so I had 14 patients in all. One of whom was dying and sadly was being nursed in the bay, as we had no side rooms available to give her the privacy that should have been afforded to her. It was coming up to the end of my shift, and I sat at the nurse's station completing my documentation for the shift. I looked up and saw an elderly gentleman walk up towards one of the bays I was looking after. Thinking I should probably go and check how the lady was doing, I went into the bay only to be met by a healthcare assistant coming out from behind the curtains to get me. The lady had just passed away. We stayed on to help perform last offices while packing up her things. I took a photo out of the locker. Upon commenting, "Oh, that's her husband." The HCA said she used to talk about him often and had missed him greatly since he died. Yep, that was the man I had seen walking up the corridor. I guess he was coming to get his wife. On another occasion, I was working in a hematology unit for 6 months. We had a patient who we looked after for months, but sadly she died. I was assisting another nurse with last offices, and just as we were about to wrap her in the sheet, I commented, "I wonder whether Rita is here watching." Rita was the name of the patient. I knew I would be if it were me. At that point, the large strip light above the bed went from being bright to a very soft light. The light also went from being right the way across the strip to being a soft ball in the middle. The room went very cold too. The other nurse and I looked at each other and said, "Good night, Rita. God bless." At that point, I literally felt something rush right through me. The window was behind me, if that has anything to do with it. I kind of think it does. The light went back to normal and the temperature came back up. The other nurse was a little spooked by this, to say the least. A couple of days later, I was back on duty again. Sadly, another patient died in the same room. The same nurse, ironically, was caring for that patient, but she was absolutely flat out giving chemo, etc. I offered to go in and do last offices as I knew the patient well. So I went in with an HCA, and when we got to the point with the sheet, I was telling him what had happened the last time I was doing this. He asked, and it was all the ward had talked about for the previous couple of days. At that point, the exact same thing happened with the light again. What was strange, the time of day was different, late afternoon, as opposed to late evening, and none of the other lights on the ward were affected. And when I asked the patient who next went in that room whether she had any problems with her light, the answer was always no. So who knows? Maybe it was the patient saying their goodbyes? I'm also a midwife. And talking of rooms which have feelings, there is a room on our labor ward that a student midwife I never liked going in. I mentioned this once to one of the midwives, and she said that whenever a baby died, he or she is placed in a Moses basket in this room for family to come and see. It's the most eerie feeling imaginable. On a lighter note, while working a night shift once on a postnatal ward, we had an unusual amount of babies in the nursery. We had a rooming policy, but we had 4 LSCS that day, and there were another 4 babies whose mothers were exhausted and just needed a couple of hours sleep. So there were 4 of us trying to settle 8 babies. We were, as you do, talking about ghost stories, as one of the rooms on the ward was reputed to be haunted. Now, bear in mind that the unit is heavily locked at night. You have to swipe access to get into the maternity wing and also, again, onto each ward. So unless the intercom goes off, people can only get in with a swipe card, of which your card has to be specifically activated to work. In the middle of a particularly exciting story, one of the girl's faces went absolutely beyond white, and she let out the most horrific scream. She was looking in the mirror, in which you could see the reflection of the door into the nursery. When we looked at the door, we could see the figure of a man, of whom nobody knew. At this point, the door came flying open, and the poor guy, who was a new porter who none of us had met, came rushing in trying to calm us down. He had come onto the ward to get a bed to take to the labor ward for a mum who had happened epidural. So eventually we all laughed and calmed down. The next night it was mainly the same team working, myself and another midwife, the same maternity care assistant who had screamed the night before, but another MCA was working with her that night. At about 3 a.m., there was in what was going on, and we were laughing about the night before. The new MCA looked a little confused, so the other MCA took her into the nursery to start recounting the story. At this point, the doors at the end of the ward opened, and the same porter walked back in. Genius timing. We all put our fingers to our lips and gestured him to come back down the corridor quickly and to go and look into the nursery. The following scream, blood-curdling, actually, we really scared her, was absolutely priceless, and we were absolutely doubled over in hysterics with tears streaming down our faces for a good 15 minutes. I worked on neonatal ICU now, and haven't seen anything there, and hopefully never will. Next story. Well, here are a couple of my stories. I can remember all the way back when I was about 4 years old. I was sitting in my grandmother's closet. This is her walk-in closet, trying on her shoes from who knows what era, and my grandfather walked to the bedroom door and stood beside me. He looked down and said, "Your granny is going to get you for playing in her shoes." I kept on playing and laughed with him about it. Strange thing is, my grandfather died nearly 2 years before I was born in that very room I was playing in. I can remember it all really clear, pretty weird for my age. I can even remember the shoes. They were white with a block type heel and straps that laid across the top. I described my grandfather to my mom, and she said that it sounded exactly like something he would say. Now, this is another story. This is something that really frightened me, almost to the point of tears. I was 8 months pregnant and, of course, making myself a bowl of ice cream about 2 a.m. I turned to put the box back in the fridge and was instantly scared. It was that bad feeling of when you know you shouldn't be there and you need to leave because something bad is going to happen kind of thing. I just stopped and waited. I could feel something behind me, but it was above me. I didn't move because I was scared. My legs were scared. Nothing was working right. I was in between on the knowing, the unknown. I just wanted to know, but I'm scared also. Maybe that's why I just stood still, frightened, wanting to have the full experience. Either way, it scared me, even today, just thinking about it. While I was standing there, I started to feel something hot move down my back. I could feel the heat start at the top of my head and move down the back of my neck, and it just kept moving down. It was just hot in my back. I still had the freezer door open, and like an idiot, just stood there. I felt the hair on the back of my neck stand on end, and I wanted to turn around, but I couldn't. All of a sudden, there was this rush. It was like having a blast of air or something, but there was no air. I guess the best way to explain it is when you're really tired and you're almost asleep, and you get that falling feeling, and your heart feels like it's jumping out of your bed, and you jerk yourself back away. After having that rush feeling almost instantly, there was a feeling that whatever was behind me fell from the ceiling and then with a super loud noise hit the floor right behind me. My back was hot. There was this feeling of something behind me, the rush, and then there was the actual sound of something really heavy hitting the floor behind me. The floor was hit so hard that I remembered the shaking feeling. I turned around because really there was nowhere else to go. I did it really slow though. There was nothing at all there. My heart was pounding. Funny thing is, I turned back around and put the bowl of ice cream that I had just made in the freezer because, you know, I might want to eat it later. I don't know. I then grabbed my keys and left to my aunt's house in my pajamas and in tears. It was really, really awful. Thankfully, when I did get the nerve to go home that same night, I still ate the ice cream.